Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, 12-4, the beginning of December, headed to Christmas.
I know, it's so exciting. Wonderful time of year. Can I be honest with you about something? I know I say this every year, but it seems it's getting worse. I am having a difficult time getting this whole daylight savings time to work with my... It's like 6 o'clock at night, and I feel like it's midnight.
Yeah, it's dark.
It's very dark. So let me give you a quick update. I was on the Celebrity Edge last week, this newfangled boat with all this technology, all this kind of new generation of cruise ship. There were some cool things on it. The room was pretty cool. There's some special way of doing the balcony, where the balcony was actually part of your room. So you had an extra like 2 or 3 feet in your room. But they had some really strange things going on there. There was this, they had a really cool martini bar, but they had these shows and they had these restaurants. One of them was called Eden. And I went up there about 10 o'clock at night to turn into a bar, and all these like fairies and fantasy creatures, you know, the crew and these actors were walking around like staring into people and walking in slow motion. And it was very odd. And then in one of the shows, it was the same kind of thing where it was a slow motion thing. Hmm. All I could think about is this is the cruise if you want to take mushrooms or acid to go on.
So there's a lot of fairies on the cruise.
Yes. Huh. But it was pretty cool. Pretty cool ship overall. There was some really nice things on it.
It just sounds like another new ship.
It was a new ship, but it was just gorgeous. And the rooms were really nice. The restaurants were fantastic. The only negative is it's not one of those party fun cruises. It was more like a lifestyles cruise. You know, it was this real uppity kind of...
It was stuffy?
It was fancy. A little fancy. But... whatever. It was just 2 days for charity, so it was nice. But what are you going to do?
Where'd you go?
I would go on it again if there was acid or mushrooms on, I think, or something.
Where did you go?
We just went around in circles, actually. It was 2 nights. They went down towards Nassau and then back, but we never got off the ship.
Okay.
And everything was open bar the whole time. That was nice. And the full range of liquor was available. Food, of course, open the whole time. What else was interesting about it? That was about it. There was some really cool lighting stuff going on. The staging in the theater was really cool. But this...
Any famous acts?
No. Nope. They did their own thing. Like I said, it was nice staging. It was fun. It was good sound and all that. But the first show, if they cut it in half, it would have been probably 30 minutes too long for an hour show. It was just average. So let me give you a quick market update, tell you what's going on. We have November, of course, in the record books, and most indices actually staged an impressive rally towards the end of the week to get into the green last week.
Yeah.
And that was kind of cool. The Dow Jones was up 5% last week or so. The S&P, the NASDAQ, all of them seemed to rally into a couple of different things. The first thing was that Fed Chairman Powell was kind of walking back some of the comments of late, where they talked about how there was a, this direct path, and now they're changing it to being data dependent. So that was kind of, markets took it as a softening stance and rate hike. So that was good. And that was, I guess, what really started the rally. And then towards the end of the week, there was a lot of hope that there would be some kind of, this completion or end or some kind of resolution to the tariffs when President Trump was going to have dinner with President Xi during the G20 on Saturday evening.
Right.
Big hope. There's a big hope going into this. And it was really weird on Friday of last week. We had a gigantic move in the last hour. It was like somebody said, hey, you know what? We're going to do something and might as well get in now. So I don't know who spilled the beans on what was going on there. But... my opinion, what I saw at the G20 on Saturday evening when I saw the news come out that there was all these resolutions or there's a deal that's being made where we're going to postpone any additional increases in the tariffs for 90 days to do some more talking. And supposedly there's going to be this agreement by China that they're going to purchase lots of things from the U.S. Lots of things.
Yeah, I heard that.
You know, agricultural things. And they're going to really do a lot of, and no details, of course. And it was a great meeting. Everybody loves each other. You know, I can't imagine that the Chinese consulate or the representatives that attended that meeting love us at this point. Can you?
Well, it seems unlikely.
I mean, it seems really unlikely. So when somebody said, when President Trump said, you know, we're going to do something with, I'm really thinking we're going to do something with China and I have great hopes. They were talking about, yeah, he's probably going to order in. That's all it was. But anyway, markets liked it because it seemed like, again, there was some softening in the trade escalation with this crazy commentary that had no meat to it, no details, nothing. There was nothing. So now all of a sudden, the news comes out on Saturday. Sunday night, 6 o'clock, futures opened. The Dow Jones futures were up 500 points on the open. It kind of came down a bit throughout the evening, a little bit. But we're bouncing around up 400 or 450. And the S&P was up, whatever it was, 2%. NASDAQ was flying. Everything was great. In the bottom line of this, in my humble opinion, this is all total horseshit. There was nothing in writing, no confirmation from China. And in a sense, I think this was like trial balloon number, I don't know, what number are we on for trial balloons at this point?
40.
Yeah, at least 40 for the weekend. It's crazy. In fact, in a trading note from JP Morgan yesterday, they said, and I quote, "It doesn't seem like anything was actually agreed at the dinner. And the White House officials are contorting themselves into pretzels to reconcile Trump's tweets, which seem, if not completely fabricated, then grossly exaggerated with reality." That's from JP Morgan.
Yeah.
So somebody asked me today, once again, the same question as we always get. Do you think maybe somebody's playing the market? Do you think that Trump and his cohorts are making these kind of waves to, you know, maybe move in and move out of the markets? I mean, is that possible?
Well, it seems unlikely, but...
Why does it seem unlikely?
Well, because it's kind of illegal.
What? Why?
Well, maybe... Well, let me think about that. Now that you mention it, it might not be illegal.
I don't know. You got insider trading seems to be allowed by Congress.
Yeah, the Congress is allowed to do insider trading, but it's not true insider trading. What it amounts to is that if you're a congressman and you're going to slip some bill in that will have a major effect on some company, you're allowed to trade on that information legally.
Yeah.
Although you do have to report it, but the reporting is not public. The reporting, you can go and you have to go personally to Washington, D.C. and go into a basement and check out the documents to see what the reports are. They won't put them online.
Right. And then and try to get it if you're a layperson. Impossible.
No, you won't be able to.
So then on top of that, you have Trump is not putting his money in a blind trust. Right. Like most presidents do.
If it's not a blind trust, then we should know what he's doing with his trading account.
Yeah. Lots of luck there. Lots of luck. You can't get his tax returns. You're going to get his broker statement. Should we get copied on all of his confirmations?
I think he'd be better off doing it offshore.
Yeah, probably. So the bottom line is that nothing really happened. Now today, fast forward to what's going on today. Markets were down 800 points for the Dow. The NASDAQ was off 3.5%. The small caps were off 4.25% or so. Crazy. And what happened? What happened was there was a realization that nothing was done, that there is some kind of maybe something going on, but China was like not confirming anything. Almost mystified about this whole issue of dropping their tariffs on cars and buying all this stuff. The only thing that seemed to happen was we have a 90-day postponement, which, by the way, they couldn't even get the dates right on when the 90 days started. The first report was January 1st. January 1st, so therefore it ends March 31st. Then Trump tweeted something about March 1st. So now they're backing up. Oh yeah, there it is. There it is. Yes, that's correct. He's correct with that. It is that. We all said it, thought it was this other one. But yes, the 90 day starts on December 1st, ends March 1st. This is what happened. Then Larry Kudlow came marching out saying this, but then denying something else, and somebody else had a gun come in and clean that up, and it's ridiculous.
Kudlow must have the time of his life.
It's just amazing.
If you ever watch the guy, he's going, oh, he's rolling his eyes constantly going, I don't know what to do. Well, let me, and he's really a good apologist for Trump. I'm very admirable. He should become a spokesperson for the mob.
And you have, on the other hand, Giuliani. I don't want to turn this to a political discussion. Giuliani, yeah. Who seems like he's doing everything he can to screw up. I don't know if you saw the tweet thing that happened with him. Did you see that?
No.
So he wrote,
I don't pay that much attention to him.
This was great. This was you can't make this up, but it's just unbelievable. So he wrote a tweet, something about blah, 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 blah. He ended the sentence with G20, no space, period. And the next sentence started with the word in blah, 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 blah. But there was no space between the period and the I. So now if you go to G20.in, that website. So it's clickable in Twitter. Got that?
Okay.
It says something like Trump is a traitor.
Oh, jeez.
And then he's all pissed off that somebody would, how dare they do that? And who inserted this?
Somebody would do. Yeah, I can see that's an old trick.
Who inserted this URL in my tweet? Like somebody's gonna insert a URL.
See? Well, no, what it does is you find somebody that accidentally puts a URL up that is not a real one. You go grab it.
Yeah.
And then you put whatever you want on there. Mm-hmm. And then the guy's an idiot to say what he said. It's just pretty funny.
Yep. So the bottom line is now we have Trump coming out again on the other side tonight with the discussion about how, he's going to be he's the tariff man. Cuckoo, 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 cuckoo. And there is a. He's that if they don't do anything, he's going to slam further tariffs on them. So kind of destroying this. And so what do we get out of this? Let's kind of just really just put the bottom line in this. What we got, at least what we know, what we have is a 90-day postponement. In other words, there's a continuing black cloud over our head for an even longer period of time. The current tariffs that are in place on all sides are there. Therefore, the damage is being done to businesses with the tariffs right now, the extra cost factors included in there. So we're just in the same boat as we were before the G20. As a matter of fact, I think we're worse off. We gained, 250 points on Monday on the Dow.
Well, if you're a day trader, I think you're in pretty good shape. If you catch the cycle.
If you can catch the cycle, you really have to keep your eye on the craziness, though. The other thing that happened that was really interesting was that even though Powell seemingly was a little bit more dovish and backpedaled some of the conversations, we saw a tremendous move, just an absolutely outstanding move today in bonds. People are buying bonds like crazy, but we saw some interesting things happen over the last several days, and that's what really I think
bode well for the bond crash.
No. As a matter of fact, we saw that there was a big spike in the longer-term bonds today, bringing yields down, and the shorter end of the curve was up. The 3 and 5 years inverted. The 2 and 10s are within about 11 basis points of even. The 2 and 5 years are, I think they inverted today also. 3 and 5s yesterday, 2 and 5s today. And the 2 and 10s, we have a chart here over on the show notes of episode number 433 of dhunplugged.com. You'll be able to see this right after we finish this up. But you can check this out. This is a history of what happens, or history of the spread between the 2 and 10 year. And it shows green when it is positive and red when it is negative. Now, you'll notice the dates, right? 1978. Through 82, there was a bunch of red there, which was recessionary times and markets that got plowed. Then you got 1990, you got 1999 through 2000, 2007, 2006, 2007 again. And these all were in advance of about 6 to 12 months in advance of any recessions and massive market corrections.
Well, Not red yet.
Not red yet. But if you notice, each of the slopes continued lower without being able to be stopped. At no time at this where you saw a slope down where the spread was converging was the ability for the to stop. It just kept on going.
Well, that's not true. 93, 94, 95, arena goes down and pops back up before going red.
All right, I'll give you that. That's a good point on that one.
Well, also in 83, it did the same thing. It went, it looked like it was going to hit bottom and it came back up, bounced around like a normal thing. Well, you're, and then when it finally did make that crash in 2000 after the dot-com thing, there was a little blip in 90, looks like 99, and then it went up and then crashed big and then went way up. And that's the one you're looking at.
I mean, yeah, what this really tells us is that when the Fed gets going, the problem is they overshoot, and then when they get going the other way, they undershoot.
Well, now again, looking at this your chart, and it looks as though they really had this error that you just described, overshooting, undershooting, back in the 70s and 80s, and then they looked like they did a much better job in 98, 99, or I'm sorry, 88, 89, 90, and they fairly good job in the dot-com crash, and then a really good job in the 2006-2008 era. It was only red for very – it didn't go deep.
It did go deep, but I guess it was the velocity of change during that period of time.
That big, giant curve down from the peak is not good looking.
Yeah. And that really is a problem because what happens here? What happens here is that when banks take in money – you see the banks got obliterated today. What happens here is when you have a yield curve that is flattening, it's a very simple process that shows the margin of banks, just like any other business, you know, the differential between how much their profitability can be from the cost of their goods to the selling price. This is what it is for banks. That's all it is. The margin of the banks is the spread they can get on the money they take in versus the money they loan out. And when that compresses, what's happening here is that you're seeing a significant amount of margin squeeze, and therefore banks probably wouldn't do well, which is exactly what's happening. Exactly. I mean, we saw some banks get really hit hard today. As a matter of fact, Goldman Sachs is very close to taking out all the profit since Trump got elected. So keep watching on those banks right now and see what happens. We also had one final thing, and this I don't know if this had anything to do with the markets. I just know the acceleration occurred when I saw this particular headline come out. I don't know if it really was just coincidence. It may have been. But there was a classified briefing that was reported, and Republican senators now believe that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman ordered the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
I lost you.
You have me now? I was saying that there was a briefing today, and Republican senators believe now that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman ordered the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Apple was downgraded.
Yeah.
Suppliers are lowering guidance, reducing orders. Now the company is starting to discount some phones. They're discounting their XR with an asterisk, a little star there on the top. You have to... The
phones are overpriced.
Well... They have been for some time. I mean, I guess I don't know what's happening, but basically we know that there's a slowdown, that many of suppliers have said that, you know, they're not selling as well. They're cutting their orders. And then, of course, Apple did the unthinkable by saying they're no longer going to report on their unit sales, which is like, What do you think about that? Have you had some time to think about that?
We talked about it already, and I think it's just a way of covering up the bad news.
Yeah. Yep. And then, and Apple was down like 4% today. So they're down like 25% from their high. So you can get this XR now for like $499 if you turn in an iPhone. It's like, it was interesting because it says, with an exchange for an iPhone 7 something or other. It's like one phone. I guess there's a shortage of a particular phone for resale or something. I don't know. I have to look at that again, but it was a little odd. We have a big alert. Alert, alert, alert. Consumption of canned tuna has dropped 42% per capita from the last 30 years through 2016, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So, first of all, I said, I don't even know what to say about this, but they're tracking tuna fish?
Somebody is. The tuna fish industry, I'm sure, is concerned about this.
Yeah, Bumblebee and what's the other one? Starkist?
Yeah. The chicken of the sea.
Chicken of the sea. Do you like tuna?
Well, here's the thing about tuna. If you do like tuna, you find what we do, and we get it at Costco. They carry the Italian packed in olive oil tunas from Torino. I can't remember the names of these brands, but there's a couple of them. There's one in particular that is so outstanding that once you have this tuna and you open up a chicken of the sea or one of the American brands packed in water for, you know, whatever reason, for health purposes, you can't even eat that tuna. The tuna is no good.
It's tasteless.
Oh, yes.
It's not bad as in it will give you some kind of
illness. No. It's bland to an extreme. And the younger group of people that apparently don't have a can opener, they like, you know, stuff that's got some punch to it. I think their tuna industry itself is at fault.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention this can opener issue, because the industry places the blame on young consumers who want fresher or more convenient options, which I can't argue with that. If you have the opportunity to get some, the tuna of our day is now pokey, right? The way you eat tuna, which was, you know, slap some mayo in there, maybe some, I don't know, onions or salt and pepper and stuff like that.
Yeah, but isn't pokey raw?
Yeah, it's raw, but I'm saying that's what they eat now. They're eating the pokey.
Right mind is going to eat some random raw tuna.
What do you mean random? You get it from a place.
Yeah, a place that just chops it up. They have no concern. There's not a sushi chef. I don't trust anybody dealing with raw fish. This stuff's slightly dangerous.
That is true. I've been to a few places and they just kind of have these things sitting around and casually without, like, you know, in bowls and things like that, you know, kind of like pre-chopped, ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, well, is anybody taking the temperature?
I would never touch. I would not eat that ever.
Yeah. I'm not a big pokey fan, by the way. I find it to be a mouthful of raw tuna, which it is, which I don't really like. You know, big chunks of it at a time like that.
Yeah, but, here's what's
interesting. The industry, the vice president of marketing and innovation for Starkist, said they're blaming millennials, and a lot of millennials don't even have can openers.
That's a possibility.
So, I mean,
millennials are getting condemned for all sorts of things, and that would be, and that's, you know, they can't cook. I read in some other article about, you're lucky if you can find them. They're talking about New York and the store closings, which we've discussed on the show. They say you're lucky if you can find a millennial can even knows how to make a cup of coffee.
Well,
there's a lot of bad, you know, right. A lot of bad.
Well, that's how you had the
millennials being the bunch of dummies.
Well, that's why you had to have the whole Blue Apron phenomena where they get food delivered exactly proportioned and you follow an online recipe or a recipe that comes with it, because they just can't do things on their own. You know what this all started? Line dancing killed the whole dancing revolution.
Well, that's a stretch.
Well, you know, you got to
line dancing
because you don't.
If you're going to use that argument, you have to stop. Square dancing.
Yeah.
That's what it was popular when I was a kid. And square dancing is all call. I mean, real square dancing is not rehearsed. It's somebody calling the dance and he tells you to do-si-do or spin around or jump up and down, whatever he says. And you have to do it, and everybody does it in unison. It's the same thing.
What is it? There's a wheel, the wagon wheel. You do the wagon wheel in the square dancing. You do the do-si-do, spin your partner round and round.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah, I can see you doing that.
It wasn't that hard. It was pretty simple.
I remember we had to do that. It was like a required thing twice a year in gym class in elementary school.
Oh, when I was in elementary school, dance was part of the curriculum.
Oh, God.
They made us learn everything. We had to learn that. We had to learn the cha-cha-cha and the mambo and all kinds of crazy things.
The box step.
The box step, yeah. I don't know if you had to learn that, but yeah. Was in there in the category.
So, but you know, people don't think on their own anymore. This herd mentality, tell me what to do and I'll do it rather than let me think, is all part of this whole process. And I don't understand one other thing. Why, if it is in fact millennials and it is the inability for them to open a can, okay, come up with a different, you know, a different kind of packaging.
they've done. I've seen tuna in more advanced packaging, in the soft pack, with this like it's a silverized piece of plastic.
Yeah.
It's a bag,
yeah. Right?
I've seen that.
Yeah, it's kind of disgusting.
I don't squeeze, like that. I like my tuna out. In a can so I can open the can.
Right, exactly. All right, moving on from tuna because maybe there's a lot there going on. But overall, I'd like to mention that there was another. It seems there's a lot of millennial bashing going on, as we know about. Overall, there were some Center for Disease Control and Prevention poll or study came out. There were more than 2.8 million deaths in the U.S. in 2017, or almost 70,000 more than the previous year. So 2017, more than 70,000 people died. Now, we know this, we have an aging population all, but they said it was the most deaths in a single year since the government began counting more than a century ago. Okay, and the increase partly reflects the nation's growing and aging population. However, but the deaths in younger age groups, particularly middle-aged people, that have had the largest impact on calculation of life expectancy. And they're blaming suicide and a few other things on this in the middle age and younger people. I don't know. Is there something going on?
I don't know. I think it could be a kind of a carry through from cocaine use. Illicit drug use, it's possible it has something to do with it. Health issues, maybe. Over prescribing all kinds of weird drugs to the public. I don't know. Hmm. Diabetes. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities, but it should be studied, seems to me.
Well, maybe it's that Juul. Maybe more people are not smoking, or less people are smoking, but they're using those other devices.
Oh, you mean vapors?
Vapes. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they should be smoking again.
Maybe. Switching gears to auto sales here. We saw that pretty much the auto sales that came out this week that reported, you know, the most recent numbers, I think summing it up in a word, sucked. Nissan reported November sales were 18% less on a year-over-year basis. They sold a whopping 1,128 Leaf all-electric vehicles in November. Leaf sales were up 17% from the prior year.
1,100.
Let's see what else. Honda reported sales of negative 9%. Volkswagen, negative 8%. Ford, negative 6%. Toyota, negative 0.6%. Fiat Chrysler reported November U.S. sales of up 17%. It was the highest November retail sales since 2001, when sales reached 155,000 vehicles. And they told us, what does Fiat Chrysler have?
Well, they've got them. They're the ones who invented the minivan, and we know that sedans are out, and minivans and SUVs and crossovers are in, and so that must be. They have a huge edge. We have, I think, we have more than one of those things up in Port Angeles. They're always Chryslers. The other ones are no good. If you like a minivan,
I guess. And I don't know what else they have that's exciting, but maybe.
Well, I mean, the Fiat, they decided to bring some Alphas over. I think that's done by Fiat, isn't it? Or there's just Alpha. Never mind. They have the cute little Fiat 500, which is apparently a classic Fiat, F-I-A-T, fix it again, Tony. Car with issues. I don't know.
Alfa Romeo. I'm just looking at this here for a second. Alfa Romeo.
I don't think they're owned by Fiat.
No.
But the thing that's interesting on this list to me is the fact that Toyota is pretty much even. It's just minus 0.6 year over year, which is pretty much nothing. It's not even statistical of interest. So they're doing fine.
I would like to say something. According to the Wikipedia, in February 2007, the Alfa Romeo brand became Alfa Romeo Automobiles, a subsidiary of Fiat Group Automobiles, now Fiat Chrysler.
Oh, okay. Well,
damn, you're smart.
They brought those. Of course, they're not going to sell them in bulk, but the ones I've seen around, especially that little sports car, is dynamite when you see one driving around. Very pretty.
All right. So, I mean, this is really saying a lot. I think between the fact that interest rates went up, possibly due to tariffs, also some additional costs associated with cars that maybe people just don't have the money to spend on this. And the fact that, you know, we're seeing inflation in general, and I don't know, maybe there's some I don't know what's going on, but auto sales are really not looking so good. And that leads us into what's going on with GM. And the, I think there was an announcement of, with Ford tonight too. But GM last week said they're going to do a gigantic restructuring. Going to be laying off 14,000 workers and shutting factories in the United States.
Yeah.
And they're trying to, I think the number is $6 billion per year of additional, I don't know how they get to that from just laying off 14,000 workers, but maybe. They're trying to create an additional $6 billion per year from all these different cost-cutting methods. Now, what's really kind of weird about this is, first of all, they're going to continue to have, I think they're shutting down all of their smaller vehicle factories and keeping their one factory that does like larger SUVs and stuff here. Most other companies already have most of their facilities not in the U.S. President Trump came out and just lambasted GM. How dare you? You promised us. Why are you laying off? And they just can't. They can't, listen, with the costs that are going on here, they just can't do it.
And well, I can't argue with the fact that they realize that apparently people aren't buying sedans anymore. They're buying trucks and SUVs and minivans. But I don't see any reason that they're canceling the Chevy Volt.
Maybe it just doesn't sell.
It sells well. I mean, it just doesn't sell. I mean, it sells better than the Leaf.
Maybe they have a big announcement of something that's going to be much better. But then if that was the case, why wouldn't they have announced it already? I don't know.
I've driven most of these electric cars to test them. And I thought the Chevy Volt was the best of the group because it was like a kind of a it was a hybrid style, but it had all kinds of technology in it. I just think it's throwing that car away is crazy.
I don't know. It must be a reason. It must be have to do with some of the, well, maybe competition, but also the profit. It's got to be profitability. Plus, not to mention, I think next year is the last year for any of the tax credits that you get from electric vehicles.
Well, maybe that's had something to do with it.
But here's the thing that really
is. Because they are expensive without that tax deal.
Exactly. So here's what's really sticking in my side, and I need you to help me with this. So it seems that Mary Barra, who is the CEO of General Motors, is going to be meeting with various senators this week to discuss the jobs cuts. What is that normal?
I don't know that it's normal. I don't know that it's I mean, I think it is probably maybe expected because the government bailed out the company with her running it. And maybe there's a little annoyance or something that needs explaining. They were demanding to see her. I have no idea. I'm just guessing.
I don't know. It just seems to me that now all of a sudden we're getting into be, you know, this whole, you know, this, the relationship with government and some companies is a little bit too cozy or maybe not cozy. It's not the right word. Maybe some, you know, we're supposed to be stopping oversight. We're supposed to be having capitalism let it happen. This is what happens when things are too expensive somewhere. Companies will go somewhere else, source from a different resource. They'll do something to come up with the money because they need to stay profitable. It's a private enterprise, right? That is owned by shareholders and they are first. This is the problem. In a communist country or a socialist country, you have a requirement to keep them employed because it's state run and state owned. This is a private enterprise.
Yeah, you can do what they want.
So I don't understand how
they feel there's some obligation because we gave them all this money. They never paid the money back that I know of. It was mostly a gift.
So maybe they're going to make nice just in case the next time around they need to do the same thing.
Well, I remember them doing this some time ago in the past. I don't know if it was the 60s or the 70s, but there was some. I think it was in the 70s that General Motors got bailed out. And the stock was down to $3 or something like that. Next thing you know, there's a government bailout. This is during that era, the 70s, where all the cars were K cars and these stupid chassis, boxy, horrible-looking, uninspired vehicles. And everybody was going broke and you couldn't figure out why. Well, maybe because your cars are ugly and they're clunky and the doors fall off. They were just horrible cars. None of them are on the road anymore.
If I may segue for something, sorry, I'm making a left turn here. You remember that book that I told you about, Freedom's Forge, which was a story about how American businesses in World War II were the entire reason why essentially we won the war, due to the fact that they changed over dramatically to build the arsenal of democracy. Remember that discussion?
Yeah, vaguely.
Great book. Great book. I had the author on the Disciplined Investor podcast last week. This week. It's playing right now. And he was brilliant. I mean, talking about Knudsen from GM.
Knudsen
and Kaiser and DuPont and, Ford and all these companies, not only in the car business, but across all areas. You know, Singer, how they were turning out, I think, bullets, and this one was turning out that. And just an amazing story of American business helping out. Just a little plug to listen to that show. You should listen to that show. It was a great show.
I will.
It really would interest you. Larry Kudlow says, and this is just on the back of this, and I guess this is also a reason, but he's going to be that the U.S. plans to end subsidies for renewable energy and electric cars by 2020 or 2021.
Yeah.
So there you go.
That's overdue.
Yeah.
For as far as I can tell, they've just been throwing money away.
Well, I think
I mean, what's come of it? That wouldn't have come of it anyway if it was a good idea. There's just a lot of, I mean,
there'd be some innovation that would have been stifled because the companies wouldn't have possibly the money. Well, they'd have to go somewhere else for the money, right?
Like Solyndra, there's my favorite example.
Well, we know about that. That was not good. But Tesla, right? Tesla, you get significant credits if you buy their cars because it's an electric car.
Yeah.
Well, let's leave that. Let's see. Pot stocks. We got that list of pot stocks on the site. And
I'm looking at it now.
What are you looking at? The pot stocks? Yeah. The Kronos is in talks to be bought by Altria, who's also taking a minority stake in Juul.
Mm.
So that sounds like those two things put together sound to me like they're scared shitless. Right? Something's not right.
I don't know. You think?
Yeah. Something. They need to get into a different area because, you know, they seem to be cracking down on the whole industry, which we know. And the vapor industry as well. Juul is not selling any of their flavored nicotine.
Oh, no, they're ganging up on them. I think they're trying to depress the stock prices.
It could be. Let's take a look. Oh, it is almost the end of the year. And, we're stopping this at the end of the year, which is if you would like to donate to the show, you can actually get a t-shirt, a one-of-a-kind DH Unplugged special t-shirt, whereas the cost of it is the donation price of the show. So it's show number 433 if you want a shirt that's signed by myself and John, and we'll put some things on there, and then sent to you as a collector's item. It's only going to be a few more shows. Maybe we're going to end at 430, I guess, 6 maybe. So if you do want that, go over to dhunplugged.com. And click on the donate button. Type in that it's for show 433. Donate $433. And we will send you a self-signed, an autographed t-shirt by myself and John in a lovely envelope.
Yeah, Jay will do the envelope again. And I think I promised that we'd put a jack-o'-lantern on there, a small painting.
Yep. And this is... And this is, I'm not sure what's more impressive, the shirt with our signatures or the envelopes? Which one would be more of a collector's item is the question.
Yeah, well, it depends on if she ever becomes a famous artist.
Yep. All right, let's see.
Throw away the shirt.
Uber Technologies reports they're looking to buy a scooter company.
Yeah, I heard this.
Yeah, they're going to be buying Bird, it looks like.
I think Lyft already bought one, didn't they?
I don't know. Did they?
I think so. I think somebody bought one, and they're all looking to buy one now because who knows why. I think these things are a plague. I'm getting on the freeway yesterday in San Francisco, and it's an on-ramp where there's a lot of homeless around. And one of them has got one of these birds or a green fly or whatever they're called. He's got one of them with him. And he's pounding on the thing, and he's trying to get it. I was going to give him some money, but he was too busy beating up the scooter to get it, see if he could get it to work without, having to. I mean, just these things are This, I don't know.
Lyft bought a company called Motivate. Okay. It's a bike sharing company. They have bikes sharing. And scooters and stuff like that. These scooters are becoming a menace.
Oh, they're becoming?
Yeah, well, here, because now we have two or three. We have Bird, we have Lime, and something else.
Have you looked at the numbers on these things? There's a report out, and I think this group think, one guy says it's a good idea, and they all do. Apparently, if you have one of these scooters and you put it in service, it pays for itself and starts making, it goes into the black within 60 days.
How is that?
People pay $1 a minute or something to be on them. I don't know how it is. I haven't seen the report. But this is what I've heard. It goes into the black so fast that, and the conclusion is you're nuts not to have one of these scooter companies.
So this is a PitchBook article I just found. It shows that Bird could break even after 165 rides with an $813 profit per scooter. And then I guess after that, it's all – so it's only 165
rides. 165 rides, about 2 months.
Yep.
Two or three rides a day. You can get to that pretty quick.
So maybe – I was thinking that Uber just wanted to buy more unprofitable businesses, but maybe they need to get – I don't know because, that's what they're really –
this could screw them up.
This is not their area of expertise if it's a profitable business. All right, we have a lot more going on here. Scams, this new scam or this ongoing scam, which, by the way, my father-in-law fell for.
Oh, no.
So the government is releasing new information about a growing scam targeting older Americans. See, what happens is it tricks people into mailing cash to people pretending to be their grandchildren. And victims reportedly lose an average of $9,000. I think my father-in-law lost $6,000. So they say something like, here, don't be afraid, but I'm a public defender from Austin, Texas. And just to let you know, they put your grandson in jail after a car wreck and he has a DUI offense. Not only that, but the attorney briefly puts his grandson, who sounds injured, on the phone. So this guy drives to the bank and mails in the cash through FedEx.
Wow.
And what they do is they gather the information from you.
So my father-in-law?
Yeah, they called up.
How old is he?
Right now he's 89.
Oh.
So what happened was that he got a call and it was somebody that said that we have your grandson is in Mexico. He's been arrested due to, being in a driving a car, whatever the story was. And he said, who? My grandfather said, my father-in-law said, who? Brett? And they said, yes, Brett. Okay. And they said, yes, Brett is in, he's in jail. And if you want, we could talk to him, but only for a moment. And they put somebody on and said, hi, grandpa, I need your help. That's it. Oh, my God. My father-in-law, without telling me, went to two different stores, like a Walmart and Target, whatever, to get cashier's checks and sent them off or wired them or some crap like that. He only told me and he only told me 2 days or 3 days later because supposedly Brett, which this was not the case. Brett was here. He says, hey, my father-in-law calls me back. Did Brett get back? Get back from where? He was in Mexico. I'm like, what? No, he's right here. He was in Mexico a couple days ago. I said, no, he wasn't. Oh, why? He tells me the story. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. So.
Wow.
I said, why didn't you tell me? Well, Brett said on the phone not to tell you. I'm like, yeah. Anyway.
Wow.
Yep. So
these guys are good.
They're very good. But they basically get the information maybe off your Facebook page or off of some public records and some kind of...
Oh, yeah, Facebook's got to be
good. And there's probably databases out there that give the person's name, find the age, and find the family members.
Well, I'll tell you, there's all these people finder operations. Right. There's about 10 of them. They go through public records. They find all this stuff. And if you want to give them a subscription, it's only about $10 a month. You can find out if somebody... You can pretty much figure out a family tree, and you could pull this scam.
Yep. A couple other things. We have some more elderly, unfortunate circumstances we need to talk about. A 67-year-old woman was reportedly left in a wheelchair overnight at Chicago O'Hare International Airport after her American Airlines flight to Detroit, Michigan was canceled. What happened was Olympia Warsaw had flown into Illinois to attend a relative's funeral. After the service, She was going to catch a flight back home to Michigan, and her son took her there to the airport. So the woman has a little bit of trouble communicating, walking due to Parkinson's and diabetes, and she used a wheelchair. The flight attendant or the person at the gate said, don't worry about it. We'll take care of her. Put her aside. The flight was canceled. That was that. They left. She was sitting there all night till the next day.
Wow, this is a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Yep. A woman is suing employees in a Florida jail after they allegedly forced her to spend nearly 10 hours in a cell surrounded by 40 men because they suspected her of being a transgender.
Oh, so this one woman, of those deep-voiced women.
This is unbelievable. This woman had come to Miami from the Dominican Republic to witness the birth of her grandson when she was arrested at the airport on an outstanding drug charge from 2013. So she was 50 when she got arrested, had the drug charge. The arresting officer listed her gender as female. She was booked into Turner Guilford Correctional Center and processed as a woman, then strip searched. Due to her history, she was then taken to a medical unit. And so a nurse noted that she was taking hormone pills and asked whether she was a man. And the woman said, no, I'm not. The nurse put her note, she's transgender. She has male parts and female tendencies, and locked her up with the men who were just.
What kind of a nurse is this?
I don't know. It's very, very weird. So the dark web, when you think of the dark web, it's like anything and everything, right? Anything goes.
Well, it's not as easy as it sounds to navigate.
So I've never been on it. I never even really seen it. But supposedly major dark web drug suppliers have started to voluntarily ban the synthetic opioid fentanyl because it's too dangerous. They are delisting the high-strength painkiller, effectively classifying it alongside mass casualty firearms and explosives as commodities that are considered too high in risk to take and to trade.
Yeah.
And from the boo category, Starbucks has announced it will add a filter to its internet that will halt viewers from visiting pornographic websites and other websites with explicit material. Now, McDonald's banned the porno on its Wi-Fi in 2016. So now, if you go to Starbucks, you can't surf porno sites.
Well, I think that's a plus.
I think that if you're
because you go there, you might be there with some kids and you got some creep there and he's got some horrible website open with something crazy going on.
Right.
You don't want your kids seeing that.
I agree.
I don't want to see it.
I agree. I totally agree. But then again, what other things will be, you know, maybe you can't get on. Who knows what other filters they'll be putting in? That opens the whole can of worms.
Oh, they already have them in.
Now, in response to this, YouPorn has responded by banning Starbucks coffee in its offices. Nothing?
I'm sure Starbucks is just sick as a dog because of this.
And Tumblr will ban all adult content starting December 17th.
Yeah, there goes that's...
What's left? What's left of Tumblr? If they ban adult content.
Yeah.
And just to let you know, in this vein, somebody wrote a limerick, which we're not going back to this right now, but somebody I thought we should read because I thought it was very apropos. Andrew McPherson, and this is his limerick with edits. If you feel that you need some relief while sipping caffeine through your teeth, Starbucks limits your access to writhing in a mattress, so you'd better go home to debrief.
Yeah. I give him a B.
Yeah, that was a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
We're at the time of the show where we just have to ask the burning question that everybody has. That is just, you know, they've been waiting, and that's why they come to the show for this particular question. And that is,
what would I have been writing?
Yeah, what would John C. Dvorak have been writing if, in fact, he was writing for an unnamed piece of shit magazine?
Well, I don't know about that part, but let me say this.
It's not a piece of shit, but who doesn't treat their people right?
Well, there's that. I would say that a discussion, mainly because I was looking into it today and trying to catch up on my SSD technology. And so I could get a sense for the importance of NVMe M2 style of SSD plugin.
Well, that's a lot of letters, man. That's a lot of
letters.
Can you explain what does that? What does even mean?
Non-volatile memory express, which is the way you want. If you can get, you have to imagine how fast this thing is. They've decided somewhere along the line that they don't, you know, that if you're going to have these SSDs, why are we running them through a regular interface that the spinning disk uses? And you can, yeah, it's a lot faster, probably 4 or 5 times faster than the spinning disk. But you can really make those things fly if you just screw the interface and you stick them right onto the bus and just let them drain. And this is, these things are so fast that it's like, if you're going to be, if you're going to any way in the future, if you can get, if you can make sure your motherboard has NVMe technology for your SSD, M.2 type, which is the little bitty plugins, looks like a little memory card. Man, you're going to be getting such performance you won't believe it. It's beyond belief. It's outrageous.
And why don't they sell it this way?
They do.
On the motherboard in a complete package versus,
it's too expensive.
Oh, is it?
Well, let's put it this way. You could put an SSD drive for about $135 for a terabyte currently. And if you want to have this super fast technology to stick in, it's going to be $300 for the same drive.
Gotcha.
But, wow.
Speed. Lightning fast. I'll just remind you that, of course, donations are accepted this time of year. If you're feeling jolly or you want to get involved, help out the cause during this wonderful time, this holiday season. Go over to DH Unplugged. Click on the donate button, of course, $4.33 for the shirt. But any amount is acceptable and appreciated. So thank you so much in advance from your friends at DH Unplugged.
Exactly.
Now it's time to go over to the DH Unplugged Weekly Stock Picks. This is a game that we play. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell any security of any type at all. If you decide for whatever reason that you want to follow us into any of these ideas, well, make sure to do your own research and speak with a qualified financial advisor. We are not liable for anything here. We're not recommending anything at all. It's just a game that we have. You can find all the information about what stocks are in the list, what's off, what's been kicked off, the profitability over on DH Unplugged. Click on the weekly stock picks link, and that will take you right there. And of course, John C. Dvorak, myself, Horowitz Company clients may own any of the securities that we mention, and we will make sure to reference that and disclose that as well. So why don't you take this?
All right. We have, looks like, a lot of red. We're actually excessive red. Though thanks to the market going down to 1,000 points today or whatever it was, 800, yep. 700. Mm-hmm. But the good ones are still good, which includes Walgreens Boots Alliance, which is at the top of the list with up 26%. Your Tempur Sealy International, your short is dead money right now.
It's kicked off.
Oh, it got kicked off. Yeah, I see that. Bunge, which is an insider's play, is down 5.6%. Amazon, which is a seasonal trend play, it's up 1,600, up 8%. So that's a good one. Then the Bitcoin Investment Trust, which I think was yours, and my Coty, which is an insider's buy, which I may actually buy if it keeps going down. Both kicked off because they were losers. I stupidly picked General Electric.
I cannot believe I was just looking at the price. That's unbelievable.
What, the price? I know
it's $7.28. I mean, I was freaking out when it went under $8.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. I will say that the Horowitz challenge worked out. Facebook, which is my purchase buy, is up. As opposed to everyone expecting it to go further down. No, it went up.
Yeah, it was holding up very nicely. You picked the bottom.
I think I did. I think I bounced off the bottom. I think the bottom was 130 and change.
Yeah, and I think it was it up? Oh, it was down a little bit today, but it was up most of the last day. And it's been
hang in there. I think this one might go somewhere.
Yep.
And then I don't have anything new for this week.
I have one. I'm just going to, it's probably stupid, but down 5.5% today was Bank of America. If you look at the chart of Bank of America, there's some interesting support here down towards the pretty much the price where it started 2018. But we have a high volume node that we have, whereas the significant volume at these prices on a weekly chart in particular that keeps bouncing off. Now, the question is banks. You know, I've been telling you how lousy it is with a compressing yield curve, right? We talked about that. So yeah. Why are we doing this? Bank of America has been performing pretty well considering all these things. Not good, but relatively pretty good. And I thought that it would be really interesting because, you know, how much more is this yield curve going to compress? If we're talking about the fact that this 2.10s and 2.5s and the 3.5s are a problem, don't you think the Fed's looking at this as well and saying, you know what, we can't let this happen?
Oh, no, they have to be looking at it. This is one of their major concerns.
So if that's the case, they have to pretty much walk this all back. And who knows, there is a supposed rate hike coming in December. But with markets being as volatile as they are, with the tariff shenanigans going on, with the world slowing down, with the dollar wrecking emerging markets and other countries and all that, killing commodities, is that really something they want to do? You know, and also taking its toll on the stock market, however you want to slice it, it is dragging liquidity out of the markets. So I'm thinking that, you know, while they may raise, I just wonder if they're going to lay off for a while, and that could now all of a sudden change the dynamic because so many people that got in on the, you know, the trade, on the bond trade, that maybe it will spread out again. That would be really good for banks. And if it is, Bank of America has a good opportunity there. Long-winded. Huh. Long-winded.
Well, I'm not jumping on that one.
Yeah.
But, all right.
I'd like to say one more thing to you. Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah to you.
Third night of Hanukkah. And markets are closed tomorrow, Wednesday.
But not because of Hanukkah.
No, sorry. They're closed because of observant of the death of President Bush.
Right.
So the federal government is closed tomorrow. And that includes stock markets. I'm not sure if futures will be open all day, but they're open now. They'll probably be open if it's a traditional closing. They'll probably be open till 1 o'clock in the afternoon, close from 1 till 6 and reopen at 6 tomorrow night. So that's all we have there.
All right.
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure.
We'll be talking next Tuesday.
All right. I look forward to it. See you then.
All right. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.